So, you take, let us assume, a third toke, long and slow. You vaporize, and you take it in and in and in, and there is a sound like the crumpling of a plastic bread wrapper, or the crackling of the flame, and a tone,
Oh yeah, you're listening to Kootenai Co-op Radio 93.5 FM CGLY, broadcasting live from Nelson and over the worldwide mycelium on www.kootenaicooperadio.com.
There is a cheer. The gnomes have learned a new way to say who.
All right, listeners, welcome. This is Fane of the Cosmos, Infinite Moment. I'm your host, Dustin Sunflower. Reverend Demuzi's not in this week. He's suffering from probably one of those, like, cryptosporidii, staphylococca, throat infection, something or other. He's suffering, so if we could send prayers out to the Rev, we need him back in the studio soon for the Easter special. On today's show, we're going to be talking about blockades in the area. We're going to be talking about the seed swap. We're going to be having our segment of Bad Cop No Donut. We're going to be talking about John Dooley's letter in the paper recently. I'll be talking about my recent meeting with Eugene Oscapella from the Canadian Foundation for Drug Policy, who is speaking at Selkirk College this weekend. Watermelon from Wreck Beach, the woman who was selling cookies. All charges have been dropped against her. We'll find out more about that. Cocaine eye drops, maybe the future for Alzheimer's. U.S. drug czar, the DEA in Vancouver, and getting stoned in the Bible. What does that mean, getting stoned? I don't think it means doing a bong hit in Palestine, okay? So stay tuned. This is Fane of the Cosmos, Infinite Moment, and we're going to go straight to a tune. This is Richard Cheese, Crazy Train, and this is going out to your ma.
That's how it goes. Millions of people living as foes. Maybe it's not too late to learn how to love and forget how to hate. Mental wounds not life's a bitter shame. I'm going off the rails on a crazy train. I'm going off the rails on a crazy train.
Crazy, crazy train.
I've listened to preachers, I've listened to fools, and I've watched all the dropouts who make their own rules. One person conditioned to rule and control. Hey, the media sells it, and we live the role. Mental wounds still screaming, driving me insane. I'm going off the rails on a crazy train. crazy train. I know that things are going wrong for me. You've gotta listen to my words. Yeah. What we become, inheriting troubles, I'm mentally numb. Yeah, crazy, I just cannot bear, 'cause I'm living with something that just isn't fair. My mental wounds not healing. What's to blame? I'm going off the rails on a crazy train. I'm going off the rails on a crazy train. I'm going off the rails on a crazy train. Yes, I'm going off the rails on a crazy train.
Welcome back, people. Now, I don't know if you're a listener who's, say, down in the Weimar-Selmo area or in the Slocan Valley. You must be getting pretty pissed off lately. And the main reason that would be that you're just getting tired of having to go through roadblocks. That's right. It's the weekend. You're off to do shopping. But you have to go through a roadblock. You want to go to the ski hill. But you have to go through a roadblock. You want to just go for a drive or a hike. But you have to go through a roadblock. You're right, folks. This isn't Palestine. This isn't Iraq. This isn't even Texas. This is Southern British Columbia, the new roadblock capital of Canada, with 5 new officers to help you with your roadblock program. Have your ID ready. Get ready to have the smell cops come by. If you've been wearing patchouli, if you've been burning incense, if you've had garlic in your diet over the past couple hours, you may be subjected to a free search. Each free search entitles you to be pulled over on the road, searched, pulled out of your vehicle, and probably detained for a number of minutes. Free. That's right. RCMP is offering you free searches with their new roadblock program. You'll love it. You'll love spending days of your life that you'd like to be spending doing recreational things, like relaxing, going to the ski hill, going hiking. But no, you'll be in the new roadblock program. So, I'm just getting so fed up of hearing people saying, yeah, there's another roadblock, dude. You know, people getting pulled over. We don't need roadblocks. Roadblocks do not contribute to freedom. They do not contribute to the idea that we are in the pursuit of happiness, living free and happy lives. We especially don't need roadblocks on a Saturday morning or a Sunday afternoon or, say, any time but a time when they might actually find somebody drinking and driving. It's just getting ridiculous. And the poor people of Weimar and Selmo, I think because they're close to the border, they're suffering needlessly all the time. There's more roadblocks in Selmo and Weimar than there is in Iraq there, you know? pretty soon you're just going to have to carry your passport around to move around the Kootenays, to go from the Slocan Valley, to go anywhere. You're going to have to make sure you have the relevant ID. You know, you got to make sure you'll make it through the roadblock. Honey, you've got to account for some extra time because of the roadblock. It's not going to be road construction. It's not going to be some car accident. It's going to be, honey, we need some extra time because there's a roadblock. Don't forget, if you're hitchhiking to town, you're going to have to make extra time because you might be going through a roadblock. You never know. It's the new Kootenay Road Check Program coming soon to a community near you.
Every time, being a born and a disciplined child, you know why? Well, I was long from my father for primary, and I meet my mom there for TV. For me, a one day, me a few people. Not to mention, I got hamburger. This is sunrise, and we out to a bright light. Don't cap fight. One light your button is bright, so get bright. Money you got just in and be that far to die. Boom! Like I'm a jungle, it's a kill boy. Me case kill them proper. Informer dice, wicked man traitor. Want him a kill it in the 8K. Mama got me gun in a million and finger punch trigger. Informer see me clock 19 and stammer.
Well, bad man, bad all the while. Well, bad man, do it time.
That's
good,
that's good. Let's tap on the knife now. Let's tap on the knife now.
Right now we out your bright light. Woman there, don't stop fight. One like a button is bright, so get bright. Money you go get in and they dance all tonight. Boom! You never know Tivoli man, them a master. Man from Southside, man from Alvima. Pick up all police and pick up all soldier. Oh God!
I'm not sure if any man is not a master. Put a little thing, drug off in a deep root. Set an example for the youth, them to panda.
We will love them, my and raise them dignity higher. Oh, God!
Bounty kill upon the borderline. No other word, we not go no further. Batman, not a family, get murder. Another bird, blood run like water. Why don't the business to kill you on me pleasure? Don't you to know I'm in your bars and brata? Now give your ladies those expensive copper. This shop from we boss and them heavy bone crusher. Double explosion, them explode after. Big Mac 11 on left the street sweeper. If I'm a spy, me you say them a brother. Well, since them a brother, well, them must die together. To live or to die, tell me which one you rather. Yeah.
Oh, God! Beanie born and the discipline child. You know why?
No other bird, we not gonna murder. Batman not talk from you to get murder. Another bird, blood run like water. Spy out me business, it kill you on me pleasure.
Oh yeah. Yeah, I get pissed off sometimes when it's roadblock season or these new roadblock seasons just gets to me. So we've talked about on the radio show before about Watermelon. She's the topless cannabis model who, well, at Rec Beach it's nude, but she was selling cookies. And this is from the Vancouver Sun, and it's called Cannabis Loaded Ginger Snaps Cause Stir at Rec Beach. All charges have been dropped against the naked cookie lady whose cannabis-loaded ginger snaps became a cause célèbre at Rec Beach. On Thursday, the Crown informed Mary Jean Dunstan's lawyer, John Conroy, that all remaining charges against her were being stayed. Dunstan, known as Watermelon to her fans on Rec Beach, had won three court cases after being charged with selling cookies laced with cannabis resin 4 years ago. Conroy successfully argued that resin wasn't found in the cookies when examined by the RCMP forensic experts, just cannabinoids. And she hadn't been charged with possession of cannabinoids. One judge threw out the first charge because of unlawful search and seizure, and two other judges acquitted her following trial. Until this week, she was still facing charges of breaching an undertaking not to go to Rec Beach. She had signed the undertaking to stay away from the beach as a condition of being released from custody, but sneaked back and was spotted by police. Naked. Again. Conroy said she regards the beach as her church. The Crown won't be pursuing the breach charges, so she'll be able to attend her church again, said Conroy. However, the notice staying the charges included a warning that the RCMP would be on the watch for her selling cookies at the beach and was prepared to enforce the law regarding possession of cannabis products. Dunstan, a stand-up comic and cook, sent an email to the Vancouver Sun saying she plans to focus on extending her popular cookie brand and, quote, newfound legal expertise to the medical marijuana market for patients who prefer to ingest than smoke. This is the best quote. And I thought my cookies tasted good. The victory tastes sweeter. Watermelon. Woo! She won this really cool technical angle on it was that when you are, when it goes to Health Canada forensics to see if it's cannabis, it has to be tested to contain THC, but it also has to have a botanical element to it. And because we all know that when you're making brownies, you melt down the butter, you put in the herb, you let it sit in there, the fat solubles soak up the THC, and then you strain out the buds and you have butter and you add that to your baking, that there is no really leafy material left, so they were unable to botanically identify it, and therefore there was no, they didn't have the two-prong identification, and so it was thrown out, which is a huge ruling. So listeners out there, pot brownies, pot cookies, pot cakes are all legal. You can make them and sell them, and there's nothing that they can do about it. But I'll remind you of one thing. Little children like cookies. People love dessert treats. So don't just leave them lying around. There's a serious harm that can happen. I myself can remember a potluck where I ate too many chocolate chip cookies because they were good, but didn't quite realize that they were, how shall we say, enhanced. And I ended up doing the out-of-body experience, shag carpet clutch, whirlwind, and boy oh boy, that's the last time. So if you are going to sell pot brownies or cakes or cookies, be careful when there's kids around because you don't want kids crunching on some enhanced cookie and you know, spending a few hours in dreamland. You want to be safe, so don't leave those lying around. And just be careful yourself, because man, I've eaten that stuff before. And let me tell you, I always have out-of-body experiences, and not always pleasant ones. Well, it's not pleasant when you think you're not going to make it. Now, one of the things I have to say is that this show contains material which may be offensive to some listeners. If you're a listener with a very tender ear, or you just don't like hearing the truth sometimes said in a rough and coarse and common manner, then you might want to turn the dial. I'm not trying to turn you away, but this show doesn't mess around. We don't have time to wait for a candy feed on reality. We're going to pump it out real. We're going to pump it out the way it's supposed to be, which is straight up. So, this is Bill Hicks and Pot Smoking.
Everything they tell you about pot is a lie. Tell you pot smoking makes you unmotivated, a lie. When you're high, you can do everything you normally do just as well. You just realize it's not worth the fucking effort. Sure, I could get up at dawn, get in traffic, go to a job I hate that does not inspire me creatively whatsoever for the rest of my life. I could do that. Sure.
Or I can sleep till noon, get up and learn how to play the sitar.
What is it, one string? How fucking hard is this instrument? It'd be a better world. The world of sitar players calling the fucking aliens from the fifth dimension to join us.
Perfect, some sitar music. Now, ding, ding, now, ding, now, ding, ding, now. That was Bill Hicks. Kind of a crummy recording. I'll have to do that again. Now, this is from the Observer UK. This is hilarious. The title of the article is No Getting Stoned in New Bible. For centuries, scholars have argued over the most delicate nuances of biblical texts, passionately debating whether keywords should be tweaked to reflect cultural changes. But despite the fervent exchange of such learned views, there has been no fretting about whether the Bible endorses dope smoking. Until now. A 15-strong panel of eminent theologians and linguists was so concerned that young people reading the Bible today are confusing the phrase stoned not with Old Testament executions, but with drugs. And it has suggested a radical clarification to a forthcoming edition of the sacred text. In an attempt to clear up any confusion on the part of Britain's youth, today New International Version Bible, published by Hodder and Stoughton on Tuesday, updates the original edition, published 27 years ago, so that people who are stoned to death rather than stoned. We want to keep it from being confused with drug addiction, Professor Ronald Youngblood, who chaired the panel, told the Church Times newspaper. The clarification is an effort by the panel to modernize its earlier edition of the Bible, which became the most popular English language version in the world. Scholars may sense political correctness in the changes. Out goes terminology such as he, man, and men, replaced by person or people. In comes an attempt to dispel anti-Semitic interpretations of the New Testament. John 5:16 now reads Jewish leaders rather than Jews began to persecute Jesus. The panel said that the changes were made to increase understanding rather than make the Bible more contemporaneous. There is a need to teach today's generation with language they can understand and relate to, the panel states on the TNIV website. Oh my God. Overall, around 7% of the original New International Version Bible has been altered in a bid to bring clarity to a new generation of readers. Some of the changes appear trivial. For example, Matthew's use of the word tunic becomes shirt, and his phrase with child becomes pregnant. However, some changes are more profound. use of the word Christ, which was popular with Greek-speaking churches, has been replaced by the Hebrew title Messiah. I don't know. I find that to be hilarious. Myself, I don't think I had any problem even at, say, age 5, understanding that getting stoned in the Bible meant a whole bunch of people throwing rocks at your head. You know, like, I just don't understand how there could be any confusion. Like, well, maybe there could be, but I can't see, when you're describing someone getting stoned and then at the end they're dead, how that could be, you know, misunderstood as being getting stoned as in getting high, you know? Just seems funny. Just seems hilarious. And just seems like the regular stuff they regularly do. They regularly try and pull off on this one. So, I'm going to hit you up with a heavy hitter here. This contains epic amounts of coarse language. This is a CRTC buster. So, if you're a timid listener, I advise you to turn your dial now. You can turn it to CBC or KBS or like one of those light rock stations. Have fun. You're not going to hear anything that's going to wallop your brain. So, this is George Carlin talking about the war. This is Penises and Rockets. And if you're listening down the lake, you're listening at 96.5 FM Kootenai Lake. And those are some of the finest folks you'll meet in the Kootenais. Here we go. Brace your kippers. If you're timid, turn the dial now. You might hear some foul language. You might even hear something that is completely real and truthful. Here we go.
Thank you. Been a little while since I've been here, and a couple of things have happened in that time. I'd like to talk a little bit about the war in the Persian Gulf. Big doings in the Persian Gulf. You know my favorite part of that war? It's the first war we ever had that was on every channel plus cable. And the war got good ratings too, didn't it? Got good ratings. Well, we like war. We like war. We're a warlike people. We like war because we're good at it. And you know why we're good at it? Because we get a lot of practice. This country's only 200 years old, and already we've had 10 major wars. We average a major war every 20 years in this country, so we're good at it. And it's a good thing we are. We're not very good at anything else anymore. Huh? Can't build a decent car, can't make a TV set or a VCR worth the fuck. Got no steel industry left, can't educate our young people, can't get health care to our old people, but we can bomb the shit out of your country, all right. Huh? We can bomb the shit out of your country, all right. Especially if your country is full of brown people. Oh, we like that, don't we? That's our hobby. That's our new job in the world, bombing brown people. Iraq, Panama, Grenada, Libya, you got some brown people in your country, tell them to watch the fuck out, or we'll goddamn bomb them. Well, when's the last white people you can remember that we bombed? Can you remember the last white, can you remember any white people we've ever bombed? The Germans, those are the only ones, and that's only because they were trying to cut in on our action. They wanted to dominate the world. Bullshit, that's our fucking job. That's our fucking job. Now we only bomb brown people. Not because they're trying to cut in on our action, just because they're brown. Now you probably noticed I don't feel about that war the way we were told we were supposed to feel about that war, the way we were ordered and instructed by the United States government to feel about that war. You see, I tell you, my mind doesn't work that way. I got this real moron thing I do, it's called thinking. And I'm not a very good American because I like to form my own opinions. I don't just roll over when I'm told to. Sad to say, most Americans just roll over on command. Not me. I have certain rules I live by. My first rule, I don't believe anything the government tells me. Nothing. Zero. Nope. And I don't take very seriously the media or the press in this country, who in the case of the Persian Gulf War were nothing more than unpaid employees of the Department of Defense, and who most of the time function as kind of an unofficial public relations agency for the United States government. So I don't listen to them, I don't really believe in my country, and I gotta tell you folks, I don't get all choked up about yellow ribbons and American flags. I consider them to be symbols, and I leave symbols to the symbol-minded. Me? I look at war a little bit differently. To me, war is a lot of prick-waving, okay? Simple thing, that's all it is. War is a whole lot of men standing out in the field waving their pricks at one another. Men are insecure about the size of their dicks, and so they have to kill one another over the idea. That's what all that asshole jock bullshit is all about. That's what all that adolescent macho male posturing and strutting in bars and locker rooms is all about. It's called dick fear. Men are terrified that their pricks are inadequate, and so they have to compete with one another to feel better about themselves. And since war is the ultimate competition, basically men are killing each other in order to improve their self-esteem. You don't have to be a historian or a political scientist to see the bigger dick foreign policy theory at work. It sounds like this. What? They have bigger dicks? Bomb them! And, of course, the bombs and the rockets and the bullets are all shaped like dicks. It's a subconscious need to project the penis into other people's affairs. It's called fucking with people. So, as far as I'm concerned, that whole thing in the Persian Gulf was nothing more than a big prick-waving dick fight. In this particular case, Saddam Hussein had questioned the size of George Bush's dick. And George Bush had been called a wimp for so long. Wimp rhymes with limp. George has been called a wimp for so long that he has to act out his manhood fantasies by sending other people's children to die. Even the name Bush. Even the name Bush is related to the genitals without being the genitals. A Bush is a sort of passive secondary sex characteristic. Now, if this man's name had been George Boner, well, he might have felt a little bit better about himself and we wouldn't have had any trouble over there in the first place. This whole country has a manhood problem. Big manhood problem in the USA. You can tell from the language we use. Language always gives you away. What did we do wrong in Vietnam? We pulled out. Not a very manly thing to do, is it? When you're fucking people, you gotta stay in there and fuck them good. Fuck them all the way. Fuck them till the end. Fuck them to death. Fuck them to death. Fuck them to death. Stay in there and keep fucking them until they're all dead. We left a few women and children alive in Vietnam, and we haven't felt good about ourselves since. That's why in the Persian Gulf, George Bush had to say, "This will not be another Vietnam." He actually used these words. He said, "This time we're going all the way." Imagine an American president using the sexual slang of a 13-year-old to describe his foreign policy. If you want to know what happened in the Persian Gulf, just remember the names of the two men who were running that war. Dick Cheney and Colin Powell. Somebody got fucked in the ass. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you very much.
Welcome back. You're listening to Kootenai Co-op Radio, 93.5 FM, CJLY, broadcasting live from Nelson and over the worldwide mycelium on www.kootenaicooperadio.com, broadcasting down the lake on 96.5 FM. That was George Carlin with a no bars hold view on the war. Wow. Just so right on, it's hard to believe. This is a headline from CanWest News Service. Drug czar links Canadian pot to U.S. woes. The number of U.S. teenagers and adults ending up in emergency wards or seeking treatment because of marijuana use has soared in recent years and seems linked to the dramatically growing influx of high-test Canadian pot, the White House drug czar said yesterday. John Walters estimated the industry is also funneling billions of dollars into the pockets of organized crime north of the border and said Canadian prosecutors tell him they need tougher laws to combat the grow-up bonanza. The question is that, as always on our side of the border and on theirs, when these problems arise, how many people will suffer until we are able to change the trend line? The elevated THC content, the active ingredient in pot, of that Canadian marijuana means it can no longer be considered a soft drug, argued Walters, director of the White House Office of National Drug Control Policy. His concerns, voiced at a news conference, reflected a growing anxiety among some politicians and government officials in the United States about Canada, a country not traditionally viewed as a major supplier of drugs. The number of U.S. residents admitted to hospital emergency wards because of marijuana use has doubled to 120,000 annually in the past 5 years, he said. Meanwhile, the number of teenagers seeking treatment for marijuana dependency has grown to the point where it is more than for all other drugs combined, including alcohol, he said. The phenomenon has paralleled the growing potency of marijuana available in North America, from containing 1 or 2% THC less than a decade ago to 8 or 9%, and in some cases, 20% or more in the recent years, he said. This is hilarious. For one thing, we have to look at it in the sense of how much Canada contributes to the U.S. in terms of pot. And the recent figures from Eugene Oscapella, who I talked to the other day, who is the head of the Canadian Foundation for Drug Policy, told me that Canada accounts for about 2% of total exports to the States. Yes, let me say that again. 2% of total exports to the States. Now, how are they getting these statistics? How are they saying that this is Canadian bud? Well, let me tell you a little story. My name's Bob. I'm a pot grower in the States, and I've been noticing that Canadian bud, especially BC bud, is selling for at least $200 more a pound, or say $50 per ounce more. Well, shit, I'm not going to lose out on any action, so I just start calling my bud BC bud. Yes, it's that easy, folks. To make an extra buck, all you have to do is say that it is from Canada and that it is BC Bud. You'll get extra money. And plus, if the person ends up in the hospital, they'll just say it was from Canada. So it's kind of a ridiculous premise. I know lots of people in the States who laugh when they say, oh yeah, we've tasted BC Bud before, because guess what? Every wheeler and dealer in the States is calling their best buds BC Buds. It's like a handle. It's like a trademark. It's like an easy way to make a couple extra bucks. And another thing, do you think Mexicans down in Mexico are still growing herb in big fields, pulling it out with mules and donkeys and, you know, that whole thing, la cucaracha, la cucaracha? They're not stupid people. They know how to grow good pot. They're now using good genetics. They know all about hydroponics, especially outdoor hydroponics, where you can flood a field and get basically outdoor results. And they're growing lots of pot. That's why Canada only is accountable for 2% of all pot going into the States. Yes, that's right, 2%. So it's kind of hilarious when we get blamed for more hospital admissions. Now let's talk about the admissions almost rising to the levels of alcohol for teens with marijuana. Well, guess what? In the States, you can either get treatment or go to jail. Now, what are you going to do? Are you going to go to jail and risk getting a boyfriend? Or are you going to go and say, "Hi, my name's Dustin. I'm a marijuana smoker," to some group of people who are on the same kick as you? You decide. You're not going to go to jail. So, of course, more teens are going to seek rehab or their addiction to marijuana if it gets them out of jail. Who wouldn't? I probably would, too. "Hi, my name's Dustin. I used to smoke at least one joint a week, and I knew I was an addict." You know, it just gets totally, totally crazed when the United States starts mouthing off about, you know, how hard they've got it, and it's all because of Canadian Bud. It has nothing to do with Canadian Bud, let me tell you. So this next tune is... what are we going to play? Let's play Kaliman. Here we go. This one's going out to the Queens Bay Posse, the El Taco Open-Minders. You know who you are. Bless you. So glad you're listening.
Some men live his life for profits alone. That very same man, he lives his life all alone. On any road to life, yes, it goes up and down. Doesn't really matter as long as the music goes on. But Mr. Carlin, why don't you come round no more? But Mr. Carlin, Carlin, don't you hear me trouble call? But Mr. Carlin, I bet it ain't come to disturb. You best not be come round here unless you've got the sense of yearn. I never needed any reason for me to say, through all those troubled times, yes, me love you anyway. On in the roughest path, you know the rocky, rocky road. You know that life and love is a heavy, heavy load. But Mr. Carlin Man, why don't you come round no more? But Mr. Carlin, Carlin Man, don't you hear me trouble call? But Mr. Carlin Man, I bet it ain't come to disturb. You best not be come round here unless you've got me sense of yearn. You best not be come round here unless you've got me sense of yearn.
That was Kaliman from Slightly Stupid, which are great, great, great band. And that was going out to the Queens Bay folks. You know who you are, the El Taco, the beautiful people of El Taco. God bless you, keep you forever. Glad you're listening to the show. This week, John Dooley, one of our local counselors, came out hard and tough on marijuana grow-ops. And he was saying, you know, the usual drug war lines, the Yankee Dooley dandy. Oh yes, marijuana grow-ops, organized crime, the whole thing, the whole shamil. Just totally jumping on a little hysteria bandwagon that only the most ignorant people in Canada have jumped on. It's the head of the RCMP has already come out and apologized. CBC has already come out and has decided not to even put the word marijuana in any of its articles. Basically, any person with half a brain in their head has acknowledged that this had nothing to do with pot, had nothing to do with marijuana grow ops, had nothing to do. But our counselor, John Dooley, he did not figure that out. And it's a real shame. And I'm so glad that Dave Elliott put him in his place and basically knew the facts and knew what was going on, because someone on council does. You know, like, I'm sure the other council members didn't fall for the hype, but it's just, oh, it's just such a slap in the face. I was at the remembrance ceremony for the officers at the Anglican church, and there with the officers from the Nelson City Police, the RCMP, the Border Integrity Unit, all different segments. The fire department was there, all the different kind of service people, people who are basically putting their lives on the line, like firefighters, police officers, RCMP, that kind of thing. And you got to admit, any job where you're serving the public and you could die, that's pretty brave, and that's, you know, that's a huge risk for an occupation. You're washing dishes, or, you know, say me running a head shop, there's very little chance of me getting shot or anything crazy happening. But as a police officer, you do stand that chance. And so that's why I was there. People who put their lives on the line for the general public should be honored, and I honor all police officers for that exact reason. It was a pretty solemn moment. It was pretty, like, heavy, that's for sure. And it was even wilder after seeing that there was two Homeland Security officers in the crowd. And so at times I wonder why, like, I think it's kind of like a slap in the face to those officers when Dooley is out there pumping up the hype, when it just kind of distracts from the truth of the matter. It kind of waters down the facts, and kind of it's like using somebody for your own political gain. And when you've died for serving the community, and then to have a politician manipulate that, to me is, I don't really dig that. I don't think that's honoring those officers. And so, yeah, let's honor those people, not use them as vehicles for hysterical propaganda. Interesting meeting this Friday with Eugene Oscapella, who is one of the leading lights in drug policy in Canada. He's the head of the Canadian Foundation for Drug Policy, and he happens to be doing two lectures at Selkirk as part of their Teens in Addiction, or I can't remember the exact title. Damn nabbit. But anyway, he's doing two talks at Selkirk, and so I managed to hook up with him, you know, cell phone number, meet me after work, you know, zip down, have a quick coffee. He came over to Mike's place to see the shenanigans regarding the Holy Smoke defollicalization, and then went for dinner. And in that time, I got to speak with him and really do a heart-to-heart, third-eye-to-third-eye, and I'm just so glad that there's some people with such good sense and wisdom and good hearts who know what's going on with drug policy, who have studied it for years and are doing the right thing. And Eugene Oscapella is one of those people. I can't. I was going to try and kind of explain what we talked about, but when you talk to somebody who you make a real connection with, there's words that are exchanged, but then there's this kind of higher consciousness super highway that you just, there's like tons of material. It's like psycho electromagnetic pipeline that you transmit data and understanding without saying any words or anything. You're talking, but there's all this other sub psychic stuff going on, and so I can't even really tell you what we talked about because it was so mind-blowing on so many levels. One of the things he talked about, just off the top of my head since it did pop in there, was the toxicology tests of the guy in Northern Alberta. He's just wondering what the media spin is going to be on that if they decide to do toxicology tests. If this guy does happen to test for marijuana in his bloodstream, what are they going to do? Are they going to go hype out again? Or we're just going to see what happens. He was also talking about the recent changes to the drug laws, decriminalization, the stiffer penalties for growers, how that's going to translate into law, and just a whole bunch of stuff about propaganda and the media. And man, it was so good to talk to this guy. I can't say enough, because you know, you see these people in newspaper articles, or you see these people and you never know what, you know, who they truly are. But then when you meet them heart to heart, it's like a whole other thing. And in an activist community, I think that's crucial. Part of that, too, has led us, the Nelson Cannabis Compassion Club in town is going to be hosting a medical cannabis conference in Nelson in the fall. And it's probably going to bring some of the leading luminaries in medical cannabis and the general cannabis movement to this area. So stay tuned for that. If you have any ideas, or you would like to volunteer or have ideas, just leave a message at the Nelson Cannabis Compassion Club, and I'm sure any help would be grand. Now, coming up too at the end of this month is TV Turnoff Week. So let's do a little TV Turnoff Week spot.
Do you spend more time watching nature programs than experiencing the real thing? More time laughing at TV jokes than joking around yourself? More time watching TV sex than making love yourself? Then there's something you're missing. Television isn't real, but the addiction is. A message from the Media Foundation.
Whoa, had a little dial freak out there. TV Turnoff Week is coming up, and I will be there. Every year, I try and have my hand in the TV Turnoff Week scene. It's very important. This year, I don't know how much we're going to pull off, though. You have to suddenly pay money to put up banners in Nelson, and the little cubicle we usually rented is gone, so I don't know what's going to happen there. We'll see. But we're going to be all over town. And TV Turnoff Week this year is going to be easy. No hockey. Usually every year I get accosted by hockey. Damn you! Why the hell would you put TV Turnoff Week during the hockey playoffs? You know what kind of stress that puts on me. I'm like, oh, okay, sorry. You know, I didn't plan it that way. That's just the way it is sometimes. But this year there is no hockey. So you'll be able to turn off your TV for a whole week. And we're going to have ways that you can, you know, if you're addicted, we're going to have ways where you can help yourself do other things instead of watching TV. I'm just trying to think of what what kind of thing you could have for TV, like some kind of patch, you know what I mean? Like a Sony Watchman. No, I don't know. Anyway, Dusty. But, yeah, TV Turnoff Week's coming up, and we're going to pump it out. It's so nice. We smashed a bunch of TVs last year, which was super fun. You may remember Natalie Robinson of cheerleader fame. She organized a TV smash-up, and boy, was that ever fun. Smashing the shit out of a TV with a sledgehammer. Woo! I'm telling you, that's worth TV to turn off week. I don't know what's going on anymore. The world is a very, very funny place. So, let's go to Bad Cop No Donut. This is a weekly series from Ron Anisich from CKLN out of Toronto. This guy's been under fire recently. Luckily, he made it under the radar with changing his website name, with his email name. But really good guy, really hard-hitting journalism. Really sticks his neck out. And this is a show that makes police officers accountable for their actions, just like any citizen would be, regardless of what they do in life. That you're accountable for your actions. This is a weekly show on police misconduct. Here we go in North America. Radical as they come.
This is Bad Cop No Donut for the week of March 10th, 2005.
All right, police!
Bad Cop
No Donut!
Bad. Cop.
No. Donut!
It's under law! And I rule!
With your weekly wrap-up of North American police brutality, misconduct, and corruption, I'm Ron Anisich at CKLN in Toronto. Stay tuned after the headlines for a special report on the recent arrest and imminent deportation of CKLN's Wendy Maxwell. Wendy Maxwell was arrested at the discretion of Toronto police on Saturday on the campus of Ryerson University during an International Women's Day event. Later in this program, we'll tell you more about the arrest, listen to parts of an interview with Wendy Maxwell recorded Monday, and tell you what you can do to help. But first, let's take a look at what the police did to us this week. A police officer in Shrewsbury, Missouri, has been charged with sexually assaulting a 9-year-old boy. A report in the St. Louis Post-Dispatch says that the arrested officer, Corey Cranefuss, was active with DARE and other youth programs. The officer has been charged with 9 counts of statutory sodomy, 2 counts of first-degree child molestation, and third-degree assault. Police say the abuse has been ongoing for 2 years, since the victim was 7 years old, and that the abuse took place in the officer's home. After his arrest, Cranefuss was suspended without pay. A police officer in Tampa, Florida, was arrested and released from jail this week on a $50,000 bond after he was charged with molesting 2 9-year-old girls. According to Tampa Bay 10 News, the 20-year police veteran Ernesto Hughes